CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast.
And now here's your host, Carrie Baptist.
Good evening, I'm Megan Turcato, and thanks for joining us. In the news this week, the Downtown Business Improvement Association was recently ordered to pay Pivot Legal Society and the Vancouver area of drug users $2,000 for publicly discussing ongoing confidential negotiations. We talked to Laura Track from Pivot Legal Society to get the full details. Also last Saturday was Media Democracy Day in Vancouver. News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there and will join us in studio today with his thoughts. We'll have all this plus sports and your weekly weather forecast coming up this half hour right here on News 101. First up, I'm happy to present our weekly series with the UBC, taking a look at campus news with Samantha Jung, Katerina Gurgic, and Charlize Gordon, who are in studio with us this afternoon, bringing us the headline from this week's front page.
Hi, I'm Katerina Gurgic for Charlize Gordon and Samantha Jung, and this is this week's top stories. The University Neighborhoods Association, or UNA, drafted noise bylaw is being criticized by student groups for its strict noise regulations and vague terminology. The UNA is a governing body in charge of residential areas on campus and preside over five residences, including Hampton Place and Greenwood Commons. They are not completely certain as to how they are going to go about enforcing their regulations, but the UNA does know that it will govern over individual residences and facilitate conflict resolution and discussion between the organization's residences. The UNA is still drafting its bylaws.
Students can now declare their absences with the click of a mouse. The SSC now provides a space where students can let all their professors know they are missing class due to influenza-like illness. Professors and students are aware that the system could lead to students falsely declaring that they are ill, but the university remains positive that this is in the best interest of the UBC community.
AMS VP Academic Johannes Rabane is looking into the concept of themed housing for students. The system, already in place in institutions such as the University of Western Ontario and the University of Alberta, would apply specific themes to sections or floors of student residences. Rabane sees this as a way to promote key strengths of students at UBC and bridge the gap between what students can learn at home and what they can learn in the classroom.
UBC's first annual Thrive Week was jam-packed with events. UBC President Stephen Toop co-hosted a healthy cooking show to kick off the week. Various speakers and panelists were featured throughout the week, including a guest speaker and panel discussion on Suicide Awareness Day. Thrive Week was an initiative put on by the UBC VP Students Office.
Yesterday, the UBC women's field hockey team won gold at their 12th CIS championship. The national championship, UBC's first since 2006, once again gave the T-Birds the all-time lead in CIS titles. After the University Vic tied the T-Birds with their 11th last year.
AMS President Blake Frederick and UBC President Stephen Toop met on Friday and made steps toward reconciling their issues regarding the Underground Bus Loop project. 2 weeks ago, the AMS released a press release that told students the Underground Bus Loop project was cancelled due to TransLink not being able to finance their side of the partnership. The AMS also demanded that the university come forward with the amount of money spent. Toop's response from the press release was unusually strong and condemning. At AMS Council last Wednesday, they voted against censuring Frederick for sending out the press release and acting unprofessionally on behalf of the student body. The motion failed with 17-4 censure and 21 against. Frederick told the UBC that the 45-minute conversation with the university president went well. It was positive, Frederick said. Both made a commitment to move past the bus loop issue. Obviously, we have had differing opinions, he added, but in the end, the underground bus loop will be cancelled and we need to work together.
The AMS has hired Isabel Ferreras as this year's AMS Elections Administrator to organize January's elections. Ferreras, a fourth-year international relations student minoring in French, said that the AMS is discussing changes to its electoral reform procedures, two of which could see the churn of slates and the abolition of paper ballots. What I would like to see is strong clarification in these code changes, so there's little room for ambiguous interpretation of them, said Ferreras, adding that she is focusing on hiring an elections committee at the moment. Last Thursday, students from UBC Okanagan and Okanagan College participated in a provincial protest on high tuition rates, reported Kelowna Capital News. Students are lobbying for the provincial government to reduce tuition, textbook, ancillary, and parking fees. I'm Katerina Gurgic for Samantha Jung and Charlize Gordon, and we'll see you next week with UBC's top stories.
Thanks, guys. It's now time for a break, but stay tuned. Up next, we'll be speaking to Laura Track from Pivot about their recent court settlement.
Transistor radio, though he turned in his bones 20 years ago.
CITR is seeking to fill the airways with the names, voices, and ideas of you, our listeners,
who will help us raise $24,000 during this fund drive.
We want you to take ownership of your station. After the fund drive, we'll record donors' voices for a special donor recognition day.
Donors' names will be read out each hour, and donors of $101.9 or more will have a chance to air a personalized message, a rant, a birthday wish, a poem to a girlfriend, or a shout-out to a favorite band.
This is a small way for us to thank you for your support of quality, independent radio.
And I finally realized what he wanted to show me. Where I've been and where I am is the show.
Own your frequency.
This is your station.
Support CITR now. Call 604-822-8648. 604-UBC-UNIT.
Or donate online at citr.ca/donate.
The UBC Ski and Snowboard Club is a nonprofit, democratic, student-run organization dedicated to promoting the sports of skiing and snowboarding and the associated lifestyle.
We endeavor to make skiing and snowboarding accessible and fun by actively seeking out the best deals and discounts for our members, as well as organizing trips to local ski areas and setting up numerous social events.
Come on one of our legendary trips and explore the glory of riding in British Columbia. Or join us at the bar to discover the true meaning of debauchery. Ask your roommate, ask your parents, ask the RCMP. Who has the most fun at UBC? You'll get the same answer. The Ski and Snowboard Club.
Duh. Joining the Ski and Board Club is easy. Come by our office, sub 115, anytime with some money to become a member. Your membership gives you access to all the deals offered by our sponsors, cheap beverages at our parties, an invitation to all club events, and of course, only members can come on the trips. Yeah.
You're listening to News 101, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. The Vancouver Area Network of Drug Users and Pivot Legal Society launched a legal complaint against the city and the Downtown Business Improvement Association, alleging discrimination against people who appear homeless. Last week, the Downtown Business Improvement Association was ordered to pay Pivot and Vandu $2,000 for publicly discussing the ongoing confidential negotiations. For more on the story, we go to Brad Pepping in discussion with Pivot's Laura Track.
All right, well, thank you very much for joining me today. I have Laura Track online from Pivot Legal Society. And I was wondering, Laura, if you could walk us through one of the stories that's recently been in the Vancouver Sun about the Downtown Business Association having to pay Pivot Legal Society a $2,000 fine for a comment that was posted on the province's webpage in regards to a complaint that Pivot filed back in, the posting was back in July. So maybe you could just give us some context. What happened back with this complaint, and why was Pivot engaging with the Downtown Business Association?
Sure. Back in 2008, Pivot made a human rights complaint against the Downtown Ambassador Program. The Downtown Ambassadors are Genesis private security guards, and they are employed by the Downtown Vancouver Business Improvement Association to act as this Downtown Ambassador Program. And what they do is, and you've probably seen them, and your listeners have probably seen them walking around downtown in red jackets and hats. And part of their job is, it appears, to remove homeless people from the sidewalks and the streets and the alleys in the Vancouver Business District and to tell them to move along. And we have a problem with that, and we made a complaint to the Human Rights Tribunal to the effect that that kind of policy from the Downtown Ambassadors constitutes discrimination. It's a violation of homeless people's human rights and discriminates against people on the basis of their class. And by discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities. And those are groups that are protected by human rights legislation. So we made that complaint against the BIA and also against the City of Vancouver, who until recently was funding some of the downtown ambassador's operations. And the two respondents, the BIA and the city, applied to have the dispute struck out. So applied to have the dispute basically thrown out of the tribunal without it going to hearing. And they were unsuccessful in those applications, and that was decided in July of this year. The dispute resolution officer decided that the case should go forward and should go to a full hearing. Before that happened, we had some settlement negotiations with the respondents about there being a potential way of settling the case without it having to go through the dispute resolution process. And those negotiations broke down, and we were unable to come to an agreement that satisfied both parties. So after the applications to dismiss were rejected, the executive director of the Business Improvement Association, Charles Gauthier, was quoted in a number of media outlets disclosing his view of the reasons the settlement negotiations broke down. And all of the parties to the settlement negotiations had signed confidentiality agreements stating that none of the contents of those discussions could be made public. And we felt that the executive director was in breach of those undertakings. And we felt put in a really difficult position because, from our perspective, what he was telling people through the media was not accurate, but we didn't feel that we could correct his version of events without ourselves violating the settlement agreement. So we made an application to the Human Rights Tribunal for an order that stating that he was in breach of the confidentiality agreement and an order and asking for an order for costs of that application. And we recently received the ruling from the tribunal agreeing with us that Mr. Gauthier did violate the settlement negotiations. The tribunal member wrote that this constituted improper conduct and gave Pivot and Vandu, the two complainants in the case, an order of $2,000 in costs to cover the application fees. So it was quite a positive result from our perspective, and we're very pleased with the tribunal's decision to recognize that this was really improper conduct. It undermined the tribunal's own proceedings, and that these confidentiality agreements must be taken seriously.
And so, in your opinion, do you believe that now that the tribunal has made this decision, will the complaint that you originally filed be able to move on? And how do you go from here?
Exactly. The complaint is scheduled to be heard in May of 2010. It's an unfortunately long timeline because part of our reason for wanting to bring the case forward was to ensure that there would be a decision from the Human Rights Tribunal before the Olympics,
right,
because we know that there will be hundreds of private security guards here for the duration of the Games. And we think it's important that there's some clarity from the Human Rights Tribunal about what constitutes improper and discriminatory conduct on the part of private security guards when they're interacting with homeless people in public areas. Unfortunately, we're not going to have that decision before the Olympic Games, but we look forward to having the case heard in May.
And again, asking in your opinion, how do you feel that this is a critical analysis of what kind of non-independent media or the media sources that we have in Vancouver are playing in these types of decisions? Is there, in your opinion, is there any responsibility on behalf of those newspapers or any of the online media to reject any of that type of comment that could jeopardize any ongoing proceedings?
I don't think so. I don't think it's up to media outlets to be censoring or patrolling what gets put up on their websites. It's always the obligation of the speaker or the writer or the commenter to ensure that they're acting within the constraints of the law. And in this case, Mr. Gauthier simply was not.
So you mentioned that the $2,000 is simply to cover the costs of the complaint. Do you feel that that is enough to deter any type of future similar situations?
I'm hopeful that it is. The tribunal member wrote that this was a damage award that was on the high end of the spectrum for these types of infractions. And that in part was due to the prejudicial impact that Mr. Gauthier's comments had on Pivot and Van Du, in that his version of events was available to the public through the media, and our version of events was not, because we were quite properly respecting the terms of the confidentiality agreement. So I think that this does send a message that the tribunal takes confidentiality seriously and will penalize parties that violate that agreement.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much for speaking with me today.
You're very welcome.
And you're back in the studio with Brad, and I just wanted to give you an update of after speaking with Laura Track at Pivot Legal Society and kind of the ramifications of what that kind of case stands for in Vancouver. As some of our steadfast listeners of News 101 would be aware, Saturday, November 7th was Media Democracy Day in Vancouver. And with a full day of panels and discussions at the Vancouver Public Library, the topics that we were engaging with was independent media in Vancouver and what is media. And so according to the website, Media Democracy Day is intended to be a production and distribution model which promotes a system that informs and empowers all members of society and enhances democratic values. So I wanted to bring this issue back to the responsibilities of media and whether or not they should have any type of censorship when it comes to displaying or having the ability to, I guess, foster legal activity in the case where they're able to allow a member or of a confidentiality agreement to post something that contradicts that agreement. However, I did take part in a activity Saturday, and I engaged with a panel that was addressing media and decolonization. And so this again brings it back to the idea of what is media doing in our society. So led by activists Harsha Walia and Dustin Rivers, the discussion addressed how media can at once reinforce neocolonialism, but on the other hand can start to work to foster solidarity between, quote, the indigenous and the settlers. So the idea of decolonization was addressed in the ways in which media is involved in that, and they addressed it in such a way that because media is looking at media in a narrow, slightly objective stance is really irrational because it cannot be done so. The panelist argued that media is part of a controlling monolithic power system that is so ingrained in our society that it dictates our actions, our thoughts, and mode of living. So the panelists suggested that the best way to overcome the difference between neocolonialism and decolonialism is to reject the notion that media can be objective. So here the panelists addressed how media can be at once overt or subtly racist, and they brought up examples of whenever you hear about immigration in Vancouver, things like that, or any type of natural disaster. Also, they addressed that media must name their subjective bias rather than purporting objectivity. And it was interesting, I was able to discuss this with the UBC, who are just in our studio, and the responsibility as us, as alternative media, and how we play a role in this. And so they're obviously discussion questions that we need to bring up in Vancouver, especially in terms of the upcoming Olympics. And I do thank Laura Track for speaking with me today on behalf of Pivot Legal Society, and we'll make sure that we keep that in mind when Vizu is going to be patrolling Vancouver streets. Thanks so much, and back to you, Megan.
Thanks for bringing us your thoughts on Media Democracy Day. We're going to take another break now, but stay tuned. Sports and weather are up next. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Conservation is the first and best resource option for BC. Do your part. Turn off the lights when you leave a room and unplug your cell phone charger when charging is complete. Visit bchydro.com to find out more ways you can make a difference. This message brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
And I was crying on the staircase, begging you, please let's go. And I said, Juliet, take me to Science Team's GIR. All we gotta do is go and register on the SciTeam website, SciTeam.ubc. It's a job maker, baby, just say yes.
SciTeam presents Get Into Research, November 19th in Woodward, IRC. With keynote by Jamie Matthews, Officer of the Order of Canada, and workshops on NSERC, co-op, and volunteering, GIR will get you that job in research you've always wanted. Be there.
Well-known pimp, narcotics king, big-time racketeer, back in full force.
This could be one of the big moments in your life. Don't make it your last.
Look, this thing might be bigger than even we think it is.
Do you need an upgrade to the soundtrack to your life? Maybe a song from a film or a tune from TV. Radio Free GAC brings you sounds of the cinema, along with the songs that will be defining your future and the forgotten classics that need a little rescue.
Come on, baby. Come on. I won't let you down. Follow me.
Radio Free GAC. Monday evening, 7:30 till 9 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Welcome back to News 101. Right now it's 5:21. And time for your Thunderbird Eye on Sports with Tyler Noble.
We begin with the Women's Field Hockey Nationals in Victoria. The UBC Thunderbirds capped off an undefeated 2009 CIS Championship with a near-perfect performance in the gold medal final yesterday, beating the Alberta Pandas 6-0 to capture their record 12th McRae Cup. It's UBC's first national championship since 2006 after finishing fourth in Toronto 2 years ago and third in last year's tournament, also held in Victoria. Student transfer Robin Pendleton was named the CIS Tournament MVP. The first-team All-Canadian forward gave UBC a 2-0 lead in the 13th minute. We'll have more on UBC's triumph tomorrow on Wiener's Barbecue. The UBC women's rugby team has won fifth place at the national championships on home turf. The Thunderbirds beat Western Ontario 27-0 yesterday in their final game of the season. Wilson Wong reports.
UBC was relegated to this game after losses to Guelph and eventual finalist St. Francis Xavier. But the Thunderbirds are clearly the better team in the battle for fifth place in the country. Radha Jain scores three tries, including one on a 70-yard run down the right side. Darcy Patterson adds the other UBC try, and fifth-year senior Michelle Helmetzi knocks home a penalty kick and a convert for the rest of the Thunderbirds' scoring. Helmetzi and three other UBC players are graduating after this year. They are Caitlin Harris, Sarah Harabi, and Maggie Ritchie. Here's Ritchie after her last game as a T-Bird.
It's pretty emotional finishing off 5 years, but we've definitely been the team to, you know, prove that we deserve to be in to have two berths in this national division, and we're a great team, and UBC's got so much talent, and it's been an honor to play for 5 years.
UBC finishes their season with a record of 4 wins and 5 losses. Lethbridge ends up winning their third straight CIS title, beating St. FX 20-3. Wilson Wong, CITR Sports, Vancouver.
The UBC women's soccer team will face the York Lions in quarterfinal play at the CIS Championships in Toronto Thursday afternoon. UBC earned a berth in the Nationals after reaching the Canada West title game versus Trinity Western this past weekend. Trinity took that by a score of 1-0 on Saturday. As for men's soccer, their season comes to a disappointing end after a bronze medal finish in the Canada West Final Four for the second year in a row. UBC failed to reach the conference championship game after a 1-0 loss in the semis to the Alberta Golden Bears on Friday. Well, it's the best matchup in women's basketball in all of Canada, UBC and SFU. But on Saturday, the clan continued their recent dominance of the Birds with a 67-59 victory up at Burnaby Mountain. Saturday was a similar story to the games between these two last year. UBC was leading or keeping pace most of the way through before SFU pulled away in the fourth to pick up their 38th consecutive win. Fourth-year guard Devin Lisson had 14 points for UBC in 36 minutes of action.
I just saw us not being able to make that push and SFU being able to do it. We let them score the way that we knew they could score. We let Robin Buna go left. That's where she wants to go. We let her hit a three. We let them do the rolls. We let Laurel get to the left side of the floor. I think we just next time you need to tighten up and hold that throughout the whole game.
Both UBC basketball teams play host to Saskatchewan and Alberta this weekend, games you can catch right here on CITR. The UBC men's hockey team hoped to end their mini-skid this past weekend, but there was just one problem. They were hosting the number 2-ranked Alberta Golden Bears. The Bears proved their national ranking is more than justified, sweeping the Birds with a 6-2 win on Friday, followed by an 8-1 thumping on Saturday. UBC was in Friday's game through two periods, trailing 3-2 before the powerhouse Bears took over. Alberta picked up right where they left off Saturday, chasing starting goalie Francois Thuot in the second period after allowing 4 goals on 12 shots. The Thunderbirds are now tied with Lethbridge at the bottom of the Canada West standings with just 7 points, 2 back of Saskatchewan for the fourth and final playoff spot. UBC travels to Saskatoon to face those Huskies this weekend. The weekend wasn't any kinder for the women's hockey team as they too were swept by their Alberta counterparts. After suffering an 8-0 drubbing Friday night in Edmonton at the hands of the Pandas, the Birds played a much stronger game on Saturday. Despite the valiant effort, including a pair of goals from Tamara Pickford and a solid performance in goal by Melinda Choi, UBC lost 3-2 and extended their losing streak to 5 games. The Birds return home this weekend for a pair against Saskatchewan, with Saturday's game heard live on CITR.ca. And finally, some breaking news this afternoon. UBC football head coach Ted Gavaya will not be returning as head coach in 2010 following another losing season in 2009. Gavaya came to UBC in 2004 as the team's offensive coordinator before being promoted to head coach prior to the 2006 season. That was the only year in which he guided the Birds to a playoff appearance. We'll have much more on this story tomorrow afternoon on Wiener's Barbecue beginning at 4:30 right here on CITR 101.9 FM. And that's your Thunderbird Eye on Sports for this Monday. I'm Tyler Noble.
Thanks, Tyler, for that report. Now it's time for this week's weather report, and for that we go to Alice Wong.
Thanks, Megan. Here's your forecast for November 9th to November 13th. It's going to be an unsettled week ahead with strong winds and frequent showers. We won't see any continuous rain, but don't count on seeing the sun much either. If you travel or live on higher elevations, such as the North Shore, it may be wise to start preparing for some snow. Nighttime lows will drop to about 2 or 3 degrees this week, so we might see some rain-snow mix falling over the mountains. However, for most people, you won't see any actual accumulation on the roads. Today, Monday afternoon, we saw some strong winds, thanks to a passing cold front. Monday evening to the overnight will be mostly cloudy, with periods of rain developing overnight and a low of 5 degrees. Tuesday, periods of rain and increasing wind by the afternoon, high of 8 degrees. Wednesday, cloudy with showers, high of 7. Thursday will be mostly cloudy with some sunny breaks, high of 7. Friday, mostly cloudy with increasing cloud cover by the afternoon, high of 8. Currently, it's mostly cloudy and 9 degrees at YVR. That's your weather for this week, brought to you by the Storm Club of UBC.
So, Alice, every week we hear that the Storm Club is bringing us this weather report. Who is the UBC Storm Club?
Well, the UBC Storm Club is actually a pretty elected group of people. It is actually a departmental club, so it's sponsored by the Department of Atmospheric Sciences, which is in the Faculty of Science. But it's not limited to people just from the Atmospheric Science program. A lot of our members, like myself, I'm an arts and I'm an English and history major, so I'm not really in the program. But, you know, if you have an interest in weather or, you know, just learning more about the weather, anyone's free to join.
So can you tell us personally, why were you drawn to the Weather Club?
Myself, I've always been kind of interested in environmental kind of issues and geography, physical geography. So I've always liked watching the Weather Network, but I always felt, you know, the information I was getting from the Weather Network or just watching on TV, there wasn't a scientific background. So I wanted to join a club that, you know, I could learn more about the science behind weather and then get together with a group of like-minded people that knew about weather, and we could, you know, do weather-related stuff together. Like at our meetings, we look at radar and satellite maps, and we kind of make our own forecasts for the week.
So if people are listening and think that sounds really awesome and they'd like to get involved, how could they do that?
Well, if they're interested in joining our club, they can email us at stormubc@gmail.com. So that's the email that our club president checks. Or you can just Google us, UBC Storm Club, on Google, and then you'll find our website. And then on our website, you'll see some pictures from our past field trips. Like, we've been to CTV before to check out their studios and how their weather is forecasted. So there's a lot of different opportunities that and pictures that you can see on our website.
Okay, well, thanks for telling us about that, Alex.
Thank you.
And that's our program for November 9th, 2009. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved in the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Brad Pepping produced this radio program. For more news, join us next Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Megan Turcato. For the entire news team here at CITR, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Career Fast Track on 101.9 FM, CITR.